tut. Ist das Mikrofon okay? Okay. Then I'm trying to explain what is interesting in this history of free software in the second part. In the third part, I'll do a short peek into the future of free software and of the basic principles we can see in free software. And I'll close with a small wrap-up. Okay. So, as I said, it is important to understand what the history of something to have an idea how it can develop in the future. So let's go back 24 years. This is 1984. At this time, free software existed already. It was very small. It was very hard to notice. There were only a few people who knew about that new phenomenon, free software, which didn't exist before. The internet as today, the internet for sure is today one of the most important basic infrastructures for free software. At that time, the internet did not exist in this way. There was no World Wide Web at this time, and the infrastructure was by far not as developed as it is today. Private internet connections were more or less not existent. So at this time, free software already existed, but it was hard to notice, but there were a few very decided persons like Richard Stallman, who had a lot of idealism. I think he still has. And Richard Stallman at this time just founded the GNU project, one of the foundations of free software. And this was really the early years. And what is important to notice is that there were no similar phenomena. There were free software with some basic principles, but there were nothing which could be compared to free software. The rest of the world was somehow different. But a few basic principles, which will be one of the main points I make in the second part of the talk, they're already there. They existed already even in these early forms. And what we can conclude is that at this time, 1984, it was very hard to even notice this thing, which 24 years later is a rather big thing. And so the very beginnings were maybe very hard to notice. Let's go 12 years into the future, that is 1996. At that time, free software was already pretty big. Linux has been developed since Torvalds started in 1991. And there were also many contributors at that time already. But still, it was not very visible. I mean, yeah, there were reports about free software and so on, but companies, for instance, didn't take it serious. They said, well, we have Microsoft, and that is what we are running on. The admins, they had their Linux boxes already, but they didn't talk about that. And it was still not very visible, and it was not taken very serious. But it was there. And the basic principles, which had been in place already in 1984, were still there. As I said, I'll come back to these basic principles later. But still, there are no similar phenomena. There were free software, but there was nothing which could be compared to free software. And I think it is important to note that this good idea of free software grew during these 12 years, not because it was a political program or something like that, but because people liked it. It helped people to do what they liked, and that was the very reason why they engaged in free software, why they contributed to free software. So we are slowly, well, now we are jumping to today. Free software is here to stay. I think that is really not disputable anymore. Free software exists. It is big. It has lots of contributors. always also companies meanwhile use free software or even contribute to free software. So it is also meanwhile in part of the corporate world. There is a sustainable and enduring economy. When I say economy, I mean a system where goods are produced and distributed. In this sense, free software is for sure an economy, and it is sustainable. I mean, it's already 24 years and a few more, and there's no end in sight or so. But this is also important when one talks of economy. It is not an economy which is based on exchange. Many people in the free software in the free software world still do volunteer for projects and do contribute to projects on a voluntary basis. There are also corporations who pay persons for contributing. That's true. But I think, and as far as I can see, there's still this volunteering in free software. Free software is very visible, it is commonplace meanwhile, and it is still growing. I think the final frontier which we see is the desktop. Free software is not so strong on the desktop still, but there is Ubuntu, and I think Ubuntu will help us very much here. And today, we see phenomena which are very similar to free software. Back in 1996, there were no phenomena which are similar. There were people started to get inspired from free software, from the ideas which they see there. But there were no visible projects. Today, we have things like Wikipedia. It's probably the most or the best known phenomenon, which is quite similar to free software in many respects. We have a big body of work which is based on Creative Commons licenses. We have something which you might not know, something which is called open access. This is a similar movement in the science, where scientists say, well, we want that our work is available for free, and so set up institutions and servers and so on, where their work is available for them and for the general public. We have things like free music and also other media, Flickr, you name it. The successful example of free software, and free software was really successful in these 25 years, the successful example of free software inspired all these things. That is very, very important to note. And for instance, Wikipedia is based on the very same principles. There are volunteers who say, well, we want to have a big encyclopedia, which is really good, and they work on that. I mean, Wikipedia is in many respects different to free software because they are creating encyclopedia. And free software, it is easy. Things run or don't. Wikipedia article doesn't run or not. That is, for instance, one thing which is very different from free software. But in many respects, it's quite similar. The basic principles, which I come to in a moment, turned out to be very successful. So successful that other projects on the same foundation, on the same principles, have been founded and are also successful. And I think what we can see is that these basic principles, which we saw already in 1984, are strong enough to spread out into other fields. So I talked a lot about these basic principles. What are they? The first basic principle is something we call Selbstentfaltung. We call this with the German word because there's no good word in English also. Selbstentfaltung is a quite complex concept. Simplified, you can say, it's having fun individually. This is Linus Torvalds, Have Fun. This book is named in this way. But there is also this maintenance of a relationship to society. I mean, free software is something which is useful for a lot of people, And so there is a relationship between a free software project and the society as a whole. And this is more or less the core idea of Selbstentfaltung. As I said, it is a quite complex concept, complex reasoning why this is something which is part of every human. This comes from critical psychology. I can only ask you to just believe me that this is a fundamental motivator for humans to do something. One of the nice things of Selbstentfaltung is that it is different for every human, for every individual. What is Selbstentfaltung for me may be a pain for you and vice versa. So if you look at the society, we have a lot of tasks which needs to be done that the society runs completely. And the good news is that based on Selbstentfaltung, we have lots of people who probably might want to do all of these tasks. We might find Selbstentfaltung in doing any of these tasks. Selbstentfaltung also includes responsibility. If Linus Torvalds, for instance, decides that gets into the kernel and that not, that is a sort of responsibility. He takes responsibility for making the kernel the best he can. And that is also part of Selbstentfaltung. What we can see as an important expression of Selbstentfaltung is volunteering for useful tasks. That is commonplace in free software projects, but also in these similar phenomenons we see like Wikipedia or all the other projects. So I think it is really important to note that this type of Selbstentfaltung was really present in 1984 and is still present today. And this is, in a few slides, I will explain why this is so important and why this is also a reason for the big success of free software. And what is also really interesting is that this is a combination of what is useful for society and useful for the individual at the same time. This is something historical quite new. Normally you have the society on the one hand and the individual on the other hand, and these contradict in some way. Selbstentfaltung combines them in a useful and positive manner, and that's something which is really interesting and of course something which basically we all want. The other basic principle is openness. Openness in free software and similar phenomena comes in two ways. There's, on the one hand, there's internal openness, something we call internal openness. Everyone may contribute. Everyone may contribute to a free software project. He may contribute code, he may contribute ideas, he may contribute bug fixes, he may contribute this, that, a nice homepage, you name it. This is different to what we see in corporations, for instance. I cannot contribute to the development of a product of, say BMW. So that's not possible. This is closed. In free software, we have these open projects who have usually some sort of a website or so. You can contact them. You can contribute to that. This is what we call internal openness. But of course, we have also external openness. The products of these free software projects and also of the other projects I named, Wikipedia, Open Access, and so on, are free for everyone to use. Everyone is allowed to use these results. The GPL has some restrictions. If you change it, you have to give the source code, but this is rather small. So this openness was also present from day one of free software. It is important to note that we have a certain technology here which plays a major role in this, and this is digital copy. Digital copy is something which is historically new, Before the digital copy, there was no way to copy things, copy information without loss. I mean, we have these machines which copy on paper, but there's always a loss because this is not digital. In digital copy, you cannot distinguish the original from the copy, and this is a new technology. And the internet globalizes this. The internet is more or less a global copy system for digital data. And the openness I named is, of course, enabled by this digital copy. On the one hand, the openness to use the results, of course, that's clear. I mean, everybody can download things from the internet. But it also, it made it easier to contribute, to find each other, to found projects and all this. This was possible by the technology of digital copy. And so we see technology may make way for some new societal phenomenon. This could have been before, but there was no technological enabler to make this happen. So what I really like is this free and free software really means the internal openness is a prerequisite for external openness and vice versa. This is a cycle. The internal openness allows people to contribute and make interesting products which go out to the general public, and which on the other hand makes it possible again that people contribute. This is a positive cycle, a positive feedback cycle, and this is, I think, one of the important motors of free software and on similar projects. So, to make it a bit more theoretical, what we see here, I say it's a new mode of production. What is a mode of production? A mode of production describes societal facilities to produce goods. For instance, capitalism is a mode of production. Capitalism is a certain way to organize society to produce goods. In capitalism, for instance, there's money, which plays an important role. This is a mode of production. What is really exciting about free software is that here a new mode of production emerges. We see that since 25 years we have this phenomenon of free software. There is an economy which is sustainable and enduring. There is inspiring for other people who have projects which are on a similar, which are very similar to free software. And so I think today we can see, when we started in 1999, there were many questions. Well, is this really this new mode of production today? We are 9 years later, and I think it is more clear now that this mode of production is useful also for other fields than software, and that it has a certain strength. And as I said before, an important part of that economy that there is no exchange in the core of peer production. In free software projects, there's no such thing like you only get that if you give me this or that, for instance, money or so. That is, people usually say, well, I'd like to do that, or I don't like to do that, but there's no give me that and then I give you that. This type of exchange does not happen in the core of peer production. We call this, at the moment, we call this peer production because this is a more general term. Well, but that is interesting because classical economy says, well, if there's no exchange, then this is doomed to fail. This cannot work. But it does work, it exists, it grows, and it is mimicked in other fields than software. So there seems to be something wrong with classic economy. And one of the interesting questions, of course, is where does the power of these new principles come from, or where does the power of this mode of production come from? Whereas I think the power really comes from these basic principles. On the one hand, there's the Selbstentfaltung, and Selbstentfaltung leads to absolute quality. In capitalism, you have only relative quality. You have to be better or as good as your competitor, but you don't have something like absolute quality. But if it is your thing, if you are contributing to a free software project, then you want to be proud of it. You want to make it the best you are capable of. And that is something which is not part of capitalism. That's simply not a concept there. And in free software projects, also there's no boss from stopping you to do that. If the maintainer doesn't like it, then you just fork and do your own thing. And if you are right and a lot of people follow you, then your project will be, or your fork will be successful. This is one of the sources of the power that Selbstentfaltung leads to absolute quality. And the other source of power is this positive feedback cycle of openness, which I described before. And what we see is that these principles are obviously stronger than those of proprietary software. If it would not be the case, then Microsoft, for instance, would not start to embrace free software and to, I mean, let's think 20 years back. At that time, Microsoft laughed about free software. And meanwhile, they need to engage in free software somehow. They cannot evade it anymore. And I mean, in some respects, free software and proprietary software are competitors on the market. I mean, I can choose whether I use free software or Windows or Linux. This is also an hint that we have a new mode of production which is really successful, because that is, I think, the first time in history that something which grew out of some hobby of some freakish developers was stronger than proprietary software. And well, one of the Okunux theses is that this new mode of production which we see emerging here leads to a new society. I said capitalism is a mode of production, and we all know that this mode of production really determines determines all of society. What we do is more or less determined by how capitalism works. We need to labor to earn money and so on, and this is all part of this mode of production. So the power comes from new principles, and because we have a new mode of production that may lead to new society. So now I told you a bit about the basic principles. Now I want to talk a bit about how development occurs. One of the key terms we use here is, this is also a theory which comes from critical psychology, but I think it is really interesting and generally applicable. One of the important terms is germ form, in German, Keimform. A germ form is something which is based on new principles, like free software. I said there are some principles which are new, and so free software can be used as an example of a germ form. Germ forms develop in five steps. I shortly outline these steps. First, there's an emergent step. During the emergent step, there is some germ form that is hard to notice, and it may vanish again. Think free software in 1984. That was a perfect example of a germ form in the emergent step. There were new principles. It emerged in the old thing, and it was hard to notice. And it could have been vanished, but it didn't. Second, there's a crisis step where the old form gets into a crisis. When you look at free software, then you can see that there is a crisis on the mid-range servers. There was Unix, but Unix was, well, was a good idea, but then it became proprietary, and it was really difficult to have a Unix, and it became broader and broader. And this, well, at that point, Microsoft said, well, we have Windows NT, and how about running that? And admins really thought, oh, well, please not this. So there was a crisis. That was certainly one point where Linux especially had a chance. Then the third step of such a five-step model is the expansion step. In the expansion step, the germform becomes important in the old process. It becomes part of the old process, and it becomes important. I mean, that free software is important. It's probably not necessary to explain that, but the complete internet is not thinkable without free software. I mean, I guess every mail which goes over the internet touches some free send mail or postfix or whatever. And also Apache, for instance, for the web servers. The internet as it is today is not thinkable without free software. And the internet is, of course, an important aspect of modern life. So today, we can see that free software is in the expansion step. The key question at this point is whether can the old form integrate the germ form somehow. I think this is not possible for free software because of the openness. Capitalism needs closedness, and because of the Selbstentfaltung. Selbstentfaltung is not possible in capitalism, at least not to the degree we see in free software. Yeah, the other steps are not so interesting. There's a dominant step where the germ form becomes the dominant form. That would be for software, that proprietary software is on the decline. And the fifth step is a restructuring step where the overall process is restructured so the needs of the new form are then part of the entire system process. I think it is can be said that for software, free software is in its expansion step, and for society, peer production, as we see today, marks the emergence step. I think that there's really some chance that, or some hope, that we can have a society based on these principles. We see that today only in the emergence step, and what the future brings is hard to say, especially if you look at the successful germ form which get into the expansion step 200 years back. That is capitalism. I said that it's a mode of production, and it really fits nicely into the five-step model. The emergence step of capitalism happened long ago. Even during the Roman Empire, there were things which you could say, well, later in capitalism, this was also important. The crisis step of capitalism, or the for capitalism, happened when the feudal principles exhausted. That were the Enlightenment, for instance. That were one of the major things which brought feudalism and religion and all these things to a crisis. And capitalism used that and started its expansion step. And I think one of the textile industry is one of the most important things here. Today we see the dominant step, of course. Maybe you can say we also the complete system is restructured. There are some places on Earth where capitalism is still not the dominant system, but well, you can say it is more or less restructured. The global system is restructured to the needs of capitalism. So what we can see when we see capitalism as a germ form, or once a germ form, we can see that a new mode of production as a germ form can take over the whole system process. So if I'm right, if free software marks, free software contains principles which mark a new mode of production, there is the chance that this may take over at some point. Okay, so I try to explain or explained a bit about the history of free software and also about the important principles, mode of production, all that. And in the third part, I will try a short peek into the future. But that cannot be done without some words of caution. Expansion steps, as I explained, are very chaotic. Remember, there is something old, and this, of course, fights with the new. It goes in parallel with it, but it also fights it. And this is, fights are not a good basis for some straight linear development. And so there's chaos ahead. In particular, it is very hard to foresee timing. It's hard to see to say what is in 12 years, what is in 50 years. But also interesting to note, in chaotic processes, small actions can have major effects. You know about that butterfly principle. So you can make a difference. Also, there are a lot of external constraints. For instance, if nature is destroyed too quickly, then there probably will be no civilization anymore, and of course no free software based civilization. This depends very much on the development of the overall process. And as I said, when pre-production marks the emergent step of a new mode of production, then we are at the point where, well, 1808 is probably also a bit later than we are at the moment. And 200 years back, nobody were able to imagine how the world of today looks like. That was simply not possible. It was not thinkable. And so it is very, very dangerous to look into the future and to think that it will be. But the question here was only for 12 years, so it's a bit easier for me. I think one of the things we will see is vertical expansion. Vertical expansion means that things which are already present will go deeper. Free software will be common on the desktop, 12 years, I think that is not too courageous to say that. I think also most software will be free, at least this sort of software which profits from being free. I mean, there's a lot of software which runs in corporations which is so special for this corporation, it does not make much sense to make this free. But other software, I think most of it will be free. Also, we see in Wikipedia, there are serious governance problems. I think those will be history. Either because Wikipedia found ways to cope with them, or because there will be a fork of Wikipedia which solves these government problems in a way which is accepted by the world. Also, I think open access, this free science thing, is standard in science. You see already in the governments people who say, well, open access is a good thing. We want to have that. And I think in 12 years we will have much more open access and it will be really standard. Lots of free music will be available in 12 years. You see already sites like Jamendo or something which distribute free music based on on Creative Commons licenses. And that will be far more standard in 12 years. Also, lots of your favorite project here will be available. I mean, there are so many projects out there. I think this will all deepen. I think the gradual expansion is quite sure. But there also will be some horizontal expansion. That means that it spreads out into other fields. more fields will follow those basic principles. I think it is important to note that these basic principles generally apply to all creative work. Selbstentfaltung is something which is really useful if you do creative work. It is not useful if you have to work at an assembly line or something like that. That is, their Selbstentfaltung only a pain. but for creative work, it is really something useful. And so fields where creative work is necessary and today there are many, many fields where creative work is necessary. These will profit from those basic principles. of course, also, as I said, because of digital copy, external openness, the openness to that things or products are publicly available, that is easier for information products because of the digital copy. And of course, it is also easier when you don't need lots of expensive infrastructure. For instance, there are people there which say we need free medicine because medicine, the pharma industry is quite good in earning money. But in the third world, for instance, medicine is something which many people cannot afford. So free medicine would be really a good thing. Free medicine in the sense of free of patents, so you can have a company which produces these free medicine without paying patents fees. But even then, you need infrastructure to produce these things. Generally, in the material world, things are more difficult, that's clear. But, well, I think there's also hope. I won't expand on that here because that's really too long. Some guesses, there will be free pharmaceutical information in 12 years. There might be also free genetic information. There's already the Human Genome Project, which has a lot of free information about the human genome. Free hardware designs will be picked up by the industry. And also, and I think this is something which is quite probable, that free car designs, which are some projects out there, will be picked up by industry, and there will be something like a free car, which is created or built by some normal car manufacturer, but it is based on information created by a free project. and finally, I think there will be some deeper embedding. The principles, when I went back 12 years, then I said, well, free software was visible, was not very visible, and was not very accepted. Today we are in a situation where free software is quite accepted, and the principles of free software are more widely accepted. I think this will go on. I also think that states will further this whole thing more. Maybe there's some basic income if you do that type of activity. It is thinkable. And also I think companies will exploit these principles more and more. If you're interested in this part, I can only recommend reading Eric van Hippel's work on user innovation, which is really interesting. Who's not into free software, but shows how companies profit from users of their products. And that is, in many respects, well, it's very similar to free software. I think in 12 years, there won't happen much more. And that was my peek into the future. Short summary, free software took time to take off. We saw 25 years of taking off. The basic principles are Selbstentfaltung and openness. These are important and these are still there. On this basis, a new mode of production emerges, It is still in its early phase, in its very early phase. And that mode of production will determine the future. That will be what we see in, I think, well, 500 years from now, this will be standard. In the meantime, it is hard to say. And we are at the moment witnessing the very first steps into a new epoch and into a new era of mankind. And so we are living in very interesting times. And I think in 2020, you will know a bit better whether I'm right or wrong. Yeah, thank you for listening. If you want to know more about this, you may surf to www.oekonux.org. There's the international homepage. You may contact me. And also, we are doing our next conference in Manchester at the end of March of next year. If you like, go there. It will be quite interesting. Okay, thank you for your attention, and I'm off to start. That is a really good question. To read Richard's mind is always a difficult thing. Yeah, I had contact with him. Well, the interesting thing with Richard Stallman is that he always said, well, this is a political thing. And I think he was right in that. But he was not able to see how much it was a political thing. And I think today, maybe he thinks that some of this is right, but he cannot say that in public, because then free software is connected to strange political ideas and so on, and that is not so good for free software. I mean, this project can say things like that, and that's okay. But Richard Stallman is in a different position, so it's hard to say what he really thinks about that.
I think it would be really interesting to read what Wikipedia writes about this century, maybe 400 or 500 years.
Yeah, certainly. I'm open for discussion. Any questions?
Capitalism is a very stable system. Maybe not in the long term, but certainly for the short term it works. And it's outdone a couple of other methodologies kind of in societies and economics. Is this also a long-term stable solution? Because at the moment it is a minority solution, you know? Will it grow out of the minority into the majority? I mean, is it stable to do that? Because we're relying on a high level of expertise and skill of certain people. Not everybody can do this.
No, not everybody. But I think this is a question of every modern society. Modern societies are so complex that you need experts. So if you don't want to go back to some society where without industry, for instance, then you have to have that level of expertise at some point. But I think in free software we see that, well, for 25 years now, but we see that these basic principles are capable of building a new economy, at least in this sphere. So if it can be transferred to other fields like it is, like we can see today, like Wikipedia, so, and if it can be transferred somehow to material production, or maybe if information production gets more important than material production, so material production becomes only an appendix to information production. That is what we see with agriculture in the industrial centuries, agriculture was in the feudal time was absolutely important. It was in the center of societies. Today, agriculture is an appendix of industry. It's not it is there anymore, but it's not so important. And if you think that capitalism was a system to create all this ability to cope with material production, then you can say, well, this was important in capitalism, and it may be only an appendix to information, to an information-based society, which we see a mode of production for in free software. And so,
do you think there's going to be another form of society? Because, for example, if we look at a short term in the past, it was like, we were more having power based on countries, like maybe 50 years ago, and then we have more power based on money. And now it's maybe going to shift again, because many people are talking about globalization. And there's this new world of peer production happening. So is it more like going maybe to freedom and democracy kind of society?
I think, there's also a very interesting question. My position at that point is that what we see, for instance, for the anti-globalization movement or things like socialism or anarchism, these are all very much related to capitalism. What we see here in free software is something which is really new. For instance, if you ask about democracy, there is little democracy in free software. You have other governance systems. Now, maintenance, for instance, is one of the most important governance mechanisms in free software. And that works in free software because of that volunteership. Yeah? If you have only volunteers, you cannot be a dictator. Yeah? Because if you are a dictator and step on everyone's toes all the time, then they will leave the project and will fork. This is not possible. So if you are a maintainer of a project, you have to be smart and you have to be kind to the people. And so maintainership is something which really works well in free software. But it's not democracy, for instance.
It's not only in the field of free software, it's like it's going to expand the larger mode in the world, like for example, what fuels the countries at the time being.
Can you speak a bit louder, please?
Yeah. What is ruling in the world at the moment is really money. Mm. Over the countries, over everything else. So my question is, please, maybe in 50 years, freedom...
Your question is, sir?
Like in 50 years, freedom going to abuse over the country? Like, for example, there would be really a worldwide democracy system, like
global
countries, like freedom, global countries, and things like that.
Will there be countries?
I mean, there are some science on things like that. So.
I think if we really look into what we see in free software is interesting in so far because it is the most developed form at the moment. Then we see that, as I said, things like democracy and so on, don't fit very well, and so I don't think there will be in 50 years there will be a global democracy. There will be something. If we have a society based on peer production, there will be of course some governance system. At the moment I cannot say how it will be structured. That is something which is probably very hard to say, especially on a global basis. But I think it will not be democracy. There will be a lot of participation. I think that is quite sure, but it will not be democracy as we know it, with votes and all these things.
Concerning the second last question, I want to point out to ask that question. I just wanted to point out that I think the crucial point is if the transfer to material production can be made, not if there are some kind of experts or some kind of leadership, because that free software has proven that this works actually with these principles.
I agree.
I mean, it's what can be more complex than software actually? It has shown that it can manage complex processes and complex products.
But there are monopolies and governments that are, have a keen interest in preventing that.
That's right.
Yeah, but Microsoft has also, but Microsoft had also has very much interest in preventing that. They were not able.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for the comment. I just wanted to mention one thing that Mick said. Mick, if you confirm it, there's a state in America where they're actually voting on their own laws.
Oh.
User participation.
Yeah. Well, I read about. Some part of a state government somewhere in the U.S. where the congressmen were doing like a Wikipedia style of allowing all citizens to help draft the laws, where the congressmen were sort of acting in the role of a package maintainer would in our open source ecosystem.
I mean, and that's really exciting, you know. Ask the people what they think about the laws.
Yeah. And that is what I call internal openness. You can contribute to the law, in some way, and that is really interesting.
How long have they been doing that?
I think it's quite new.
It's quite new. Well,
I think there was a question there. So,
is there beside your conference? Serious part of maybe academics and economy to switch gear with these questions too?
If you say academics, you mean probably those which are at the university or
exactly.
So. I think one of the most interesting books I read was from Steven Weber. Steven Weber, that is an American, U.S. academic, I don't know whether he is a professor or something. He analyzed the political economy of free software, which is it's really. I think he didn't know of Ökonomics, but it fits so nicely in what we say. It's really if you read it, it's really interesting. Steven Weber, The Success of Open Source, I think is the title. There are also some others, like Eric van Hippel does also very interesting work on all that. For his main point is user innovation. And he researches how this works in for normal corporations. And it's also very interesting, for instance. There are a couple of more. Yeah, that's of course true, but the question is whether that is the question. I mean, today we are in a situation where, for instance, there would be enough food for everyone on this planet. It's only not distributed in a way that everyone gets enough food. So, and this is also a result from the mode of production we are living in. Capitalism needs scarcity. Without scarcity, there is no need to buy anything, to buy something. And that is also free software. You don't need to buy free software because it's just available. And to me, another question is, can we make it into a world where scarcity is no longer needed as a basic principle of the mode of production? And that is what we see here. And if you look at this in this way, then the question, are there enough atoms, is not so interesting anymore. Because how things are distributed is largely a question of how the society is organized. And this would be a very different society. And what you also see in free software is that there is that the reason for production, the reason to to do something in a free software project is to have some additional use value. And that is completely different in capitalism. In capitalism, you want to have additional exchange value. And that is something completely different from use value. And so if you think that you have a society which is based on all these principles, then I think these questions are of minor importance.
Knappheit.
Where we define scarcity as, we distinguish between limitedness and scarcity. Scarcity is something which is made by society. Limitedness is something absolute or more or less absolute. There are only three apples. But there may be only three apples, but in a societal context, you may say, well, then next year we produce more apples if three are not enough. Any more questions or comments?
I just think that the thing about 12 years to adapt that kind of system to production of cars or something, I don't think this is possible, because I don't think that a kind of manufacturer of cars want to know us what they put in the cars of goods, of metal or stuff like that. Sharing information is one hard thing to imagine that all the manufacturers will share their signs and they put that lot of money in with us. But we see that is terrible. If you have so many eyes to see that, it's growing that fast that somebody who's hiding it is not capable for it to be that fast. It will just grow as big and then it will just be bigger. But the other thing is that if you open the process as a manufacturer, you have a lot of eyes seeing what you're doing. And I think that is not as good as we think. And think that a car is that good built at all with such good,
I think that you cannot expect that it will come from that area, from the mainstream.
They will be forced, of course.
As soon as there's one or two really good performing, chaotic group of people who perform somewhere in a place.
And there are.
And there are some people already busy with it.
There's a project called OS Car, which has been existing for years.
Yeah, but or CMMN, for instance.
And the other thing is that actually the distributions like Fedora or Zuse, they allow you to look exactly into the process, how they develop.
Yeah.
You can see every bit and byte, and you can moan about everything. And why shouldn't this be possible for common?
Yeah, of course. I think it would take much more time for them to. There will be a lot of manufacturers crash.
So,
just
let me shortly interrupt you. We had on the first conference, we had this OS Car project, and the guy who were there, who gave us a talk, he said, well, when I invented that, there were lots of people who said, well, that's a good project, I'm a car engineer, I want to work for that project, I want to contribute for that project. So this is not opening up a closed source thing, but building something new. And also, what you also said, the car industry was very interested in that project, because the car industry said, well, we have our program of cars, and because of our image, we cannot build small cars. And this project wanted to build a small car. And so if you make this as a free project, we might be interested in producing it. So maybe 12 years
later. Facilitate it somehow, like Red Hat facilitates Fedora in somehow. So that will come.
Sorry to stop you here. Now that the discussion is getting really interesting, but I have to look at